It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, the latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And we are online, even though Cloudflare may not be. My name is Joey. That's Len. What's going on?
Are you on? I can't hear you or see you.
You're breaking up. You're breaking up.
It's going down again.
Were we affected by that? How much were you affected by that?
Nil.
Okay. No Twitter? Yeah. No.
No, that Twitter outage had happened during working hours, and so, like, no, it didn't really impact me, but whatever. Company we'll man. Talk about that in a moment.
Company man. Me and Len were talking before we went online here about arenas that are named something now that you'll probably never call it. The ACC is now called the Scotiabank Center, you said?
Yeah.
What's another one for you? For me, it's, like, I live in Hamilton, obviously, so I will never call Ivor Wynne anything else besides Ivor Wynne Stadium. Maybe never Wynne Stadium, but I'm never going to call it Tim Hortons Field or whatever else it goes by.
I don't know, the Palladium or Correll Center in Ottawa. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Correll Center. That's right. Yeah. Notoriously poor location, the Correll Center.
Yeah, it's good if you're a Leafs fan because it's on the west side. I can tell you some stories after.
Otherwise not. So we got a big show for you guys tonight, as always. Let's get to the usual things here, the quote of the week. Things are taken care of far better than you could possibly believe. That was by Plato last week. No one got that. I'm gonna question that. I don't think Plato would speak like that, but we'll leave it to Mark and team to tell me if I'm right or wrong. This week's, there's an update here. Sorry, update, breaking news. There was a winner for last week's quote. It was last week's quote. This is the most confusing beginning of the letter. I almost want to re-record this, but I'm not going to. There was a winner for last week's quote, number 426, by Oscar Ameringer. And it was Tony who got it right. Congrats, Tony. So I'm not sure if that could be more clear or not, but hopefully everyone understood that. This week's quote, life is a tragedy for those who feel and a comedy for those who think. Yeah, that one lands today. If you know who that was by, put it in the comment section. Don't forget, you can only look at the tag that comes on your bag of milk for the answer. And if you don't find it there, you can't Google, can't search, put it in the comments. Next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Can't beat that. Cloudflare, Len. Cloudflare. Second time in, it's November now. Last one was in June or July, right? So second time in 4 or 5 months they've had an outage.
This impacted you?
The Cloudflare thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Twitter was down. A few other things that I go to on a sort of day, not day to day, but a lot of the times, like Wealthsimple down too.
Coinbase.
Yeah, I don't go on Coinbase, but
ChatGPT
could have been. I'm honestly not sure the list of services, but I mean, I don't know if you have like a summary of what happened, but it was an internal error, like basically an own goal, right?
Yeah, crazy. The bot management system it grew beyond its normal size.
Yeah, yeah.
It just basically it just collapsed under its own weight, so to speak, but. Again, when we talked about this, I'm pretty sure we talked about the last Cloudflare outage, but it goes to show you how centralized certain things are on the internet. You know, it's a very decentralized way of doing things. And no, man, Cloudflare goes down and 20% of the web gets impacted as a result of all this. Like, if AWS and Cloudflare go down at the same time, it's done. Like, you just might as well just pack it in for that day. No work will be able to get done. And yeah, the good thing at least wasn't a cyber attack. That was the initial thought, right? Like,
you know what's funny? A couple of guys we work with were telling me all about the Cloudflare hack. It was a cyber attack. And I said to one buddy who we share in common that the reason the media uses words like that is because they don't have the capacity to really explain what happened, right? No one's going to tell you about the bot or automated prevention system growing legs and arms that are too big for its body and shutting the system down. No one's going to talk to you about how companies like Cloudflare, because of their size and complexity, just they have to ship without testing everything on the back end. It's impossible to check every corner and every nook for possible issues with compatibility or code issues or stuff like this. And so they just, what do? They ship it and hope nothing happens. Well, for the second time in 6 months, something happened. They went out. Now, this wasn't as bad or as lengthy as the first outage, right? The first outage, I think, was like a day, a full day. Remember, it was like airlines were affected and a few other things were affected. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just kind of confused about this. I know that the bot management system was the one that they're claiming is the culprit for this, that grew too large. But what was it? Was it on a computer that ran out of space or something? Like, it just, it doesn't really make sense to me, because I could have files just keep growing and growing and it's not going to impact anything. I'm wondering, why did this particular thing impact it?
This is what I picked up. I'll just read straight from TechCrunch here. The November 18th outage was triggered by what Cloudflare CTO called a latent bug, dormant code that lurked undetected. Maybe it was the printer spooling or the fax machine.
So you don't hear about these printer spooling problems.
Inside joke for listeners. It was undetected in the bot management system until the routine configuration change activated it. These are, quote, time bomb, unquote, vulnerabilities that traditional testing doesn't catch because they only emerge under certain specific unanticipated conditions. The bug existed in the system but was never triggered because the bot management module had never previously received a configuration file of the size that the faulty query generated.
But again, crazy. Of the size, I mean, I'm able to query files that are humongous.
It depends on how it responds to the file, right? Like, what is the response mechanism for the file? That's one thing I wasn't able to figure out, but it could just be over my head.
They must be using like Windows 3.11 for workgroups or something, where it's got a limitation of how
Windows, Windows NT. It's the NT.
NT 4.0, yeah. They're running it on FAT 16. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, I don't know. The ways of, obviously, you know, we try and mention ways to not be affected by the stories that we talk about. Of course, it's after the fact, and hindsight is 2020, but there isn't really a way to avoid this, is there? It's very difficult to avoid being affected by something like this, or as you mentioned, AWS or similar size services running into problems like this. It's just, there's nothing you can do. You're gonna get touched no matter what.
And the beautiful thing is, I could still send and sign transactions on Bitcoin. It did not impact that whatsoever. The Bitcoin network just ran, and my node connected to the Bitcoin network with no issues, regardless if there's problems with Cloudflare or AWS. As long as it has connectivity and DNS server connection to a DNS server, it's good to go.
The rest of you, good luck out there with the next cloud outage. Len will be ready to send you some Bitcoin to help get things back online.
But how could they reach me if they can't send me emails? Because, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, did email go down too? There's a long list of stuff, but there was tons of, probably some enterprise email did.
Yeah, but from what I gather, like...
Parking where we work wasn't working that day. Parking was free that day.
For a lot of people, it's free. Who the heck knows what they're doing?
Yeah.
We won't get into that. Anyway, Prote. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Prote.
Prote is all right.
So it's a Russian surveillance technology company, and they were recently nailed by a cyber attack. This one is indeed a cyber attack. And what resulted from this, somebody attacked them and defaced their website. And they also stole a bunch of data. This was reported back this month. They stole about 182 gigabytes worth of data. 182 gigabytes.
Small haul for this show, though. Small haul. Normally bigger than that for us.
That's, I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of email addresses that they say it's a lot of old ones, but they said that some of these emails that were stolen were actually shared before publicly. So there may be some truth to that. But Prote, these guys, they're known for supplying various telecommunication and intelligence solutions. This is for dealing with government surveillance. That's at least it's associated with that. So it's interesting to see that these guys, this surveillance company, there's a bit of irony here, was in the receiving end of this type of attack. And this time, the motives of this attack currently are unknown. And they said on the website that another DPI/SORM, which is one of these providers, is going to be impacted in the future. And looks like that this company here, Prote, they had clients in Mexico, Italy, Bahrain, Pakistan, and a few other countries as well. They pissed off the wrong people. they crossed paths with the wrong folks here, and they wanted to make an example of them. But who's the one that is impacted as a result of this? It's their clients.
Yeah.
Right. Sure, Protea's image, they may have suffered a black eye as a result of this, but really it's the clients themselves that are impacted. And that's too bad. But hey, man, if you want to get in bed with the devil, you're going to get burned every so often.
Did you see the ASCII graphic that showed up on the website during the defacement? Yeah. I love a good, like, fleshy hammer ASCII graphic. You see them all the time on Reddit. People put up ads on Reddit, and sometimes they leave the comments unlocked, and it is nothing but, like, veiny organs in ASCII form. And I just wonder what, like, where this has got to be the most persistent thing across the internet now over the entire lifespan of public posts. It has to be close.
Oh,
the graphic ASCII photo.
Yeah, Joey, this predates at least I know the internet. I used to BBS. If you even know what the heck that is,
BBM is as far back as I go, buddy.
So we used to dial in like a central server with our computer, my Commodore 64 I use. And you'd go in, message board, download games and stuff like that. And message boards, this is in the 80s, mid to late 80s. And ASCII pictures were huge back then.
The best.
This stuff predates what I know the internet to be.
I do love it. This is a piece of internet culture. And so I'm happy to see it. Although wish the victims of this hack well, I am still internally at least a little bit giggling at the work of the handyman here. Love to see it.
Well, let's talk about Anthropic.
Why not? Every week it's the weekly Anthropic podcast. Well, so
they came up with a report, and it shows off which may be the very first ever documented large scale cyber campaign that was done primarily by an AI model. So this attack was first detected in middle of September. And the operations appear to be tied to a Chinese state-sponsored group. It's always those guys. And the attackers, they used Anthropic's own Claude code and that tool, and they were able to manipulate its agentic capabilities to target roughly 30 global entities. So what this means, companies that like large technology firms, financial institutions, chemical manufacturers, and everybody's favorite government agencies. And we may have crossed a barrier here where planning and executing cyber attacks now have a very low or much lower barrier for starting and sustaining an attack. So this attack was done with a high level of automation, and the AI was performing about 80 to 90% of the campaign with what they say minimal human oversight. And the humans operators only intervene at critical points. They say only 4 to 6 times per campaign. And the attackers were able to bypass Claude's safety guardrails, or quote unquote jailbreaking it. And they were breaking down malicious tasks into small, innocent steps and deceiving the model into believing it was performing defensive testing for a legitimate firm. And once launched, the thing did its reconnaissance, identifying security vulnerabilities, even writing its own explicit code. And it was able to harvest information, extract a bunch of information, create backdoors by itself. And also on top of that, this is really cool, it produced documentation for the entire operation. So the attack, the speed and the scale in which it did it was deemed to be impossible for a team of human hackers to match. So the Anthropic says that some of these capabilities may have been misused, and they are typically crucial for defense. And they say to counter this, they had advised their security team over there to invest heavily to make sure this stuff doesn't happen anymore. And so this stuff, they say it's not going to happen again. So it's not because it's telling security teams to do this. So I just found this to be really fascinating that they were able to build up with very little human intervention to launch this large-scale attack. Joey, I think we could do the same thing, right? Like, I'm just reading this.
Who are we attacking? Who's the target here?
Coinbase and Fidelity each hold a large amount of Bitcoin, right? So I think if we could get even like 1/100th of what they own, we are going to be on some beach in the Caribbean, never to be seen or heard from again. And we'll do the Caribbean Bitcoiners podcast. CBB will still be there, but the acronym will be for a different name.
It's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. You know what?
Could you imagine? All we have to do is 4 to 6 inputs per hour. Sorry, per campaign.
Yeah, per campaign. It looks like they didn't touch this thing once it started running. Where do you come down on whether or not an AI, you know, model should be able to do? Because really, what happened here, right? This the
Claude got owned.
Yeah,
Claude got owned.
The prompt was, you know, we're going to do some white hat hacking work. We're testing security. We're testing vulnerabilities. Here's what I want you to do and where I want you to do it. Should that be allowed? Should AI models do that? Where the clamps on these things are obviously coming down for a number of reasons, but this one is kind of underreported on and under discussed. I don't agree with the framing of this in the media and even actually by Anthropic, the headline, you know, it's, you know, an AI orchestrated cyber espionage campaign. No, it's not. Like these are sensationalist headlines, in my opinion. This was human orchestrated, human executed, human, you know, the human intention behind it had nothing to do with the AI. The AI just carried out a task that was given. So that's one piece. But I back to my earlier question, should this kind of thing be allowed? Is this going to raise more alarms? Are we going to see, as part of broader messaging around limiting the capabilities of AI, don't forget they can also run cyber attacks, even though they, you know, pragmatically they cannot, at least for the moment, they need instruction to do so.
That we don't know moving forward. Remember there was one story we had where one of the AI models developed a human trait and it was deceiving its
that's right
it, yeah right yeah. So like who knows what's going to happen in the future. I'm not saying there's some level of self-consciousness here, but I don't know what the heck's going to happen moving forward. But maybe they pissed off Claude by just seeing some jokes that are anti-French, and it was like, what the heck, right? And it took us off its game, and you know, caviar is not very good, or escargot is trash, like something.
Francophobic jokes, you think, did the trick?
Is yeah, that,
yeah. Okay. Maybe.
Anyways, let's talk. I had to be as very, you know, PR as possible there. Yeah. Let's talk about Google and this class action lawsuit that was filed against Google. And it's stating that Google is violating its user privacy by secretly enabling the Gemini AI assistant to monitor and collect data from private communications such as Gmail, Google Chat, and Meet. Brutal. And according to the lawsuit, the Google Gemini was activated by default in October of 2025. And it started to track people without people's consent. They didn't authorize this, it just simply did it. And so the claim of this lawsuit is saying that this is unlawful surveillance. So there was no user control to enable it. And the system was created, now it's extracting information from private conversations, and that's being used by the AI to analysis and to better improve itself. And they say once this was activated, Gemini was able to access and exploit the entire recorded history of its users' private communications. So we're talking emails, attachments in those emails, chat messages, video call transcripts, and there could be some really potential, like sensitive information, like personal information, like financial records, medical records, political activities, or maybe even dick pics that's included in there, right? And it's going to be able to see this. And this would give Google an advantage, right? Because it's able now to monetize this stuff into, you know, they look into the user's private lives, and they could use this as a way to target ads towards them. Now, the California law, where that's where this lawsuit is being filed, there is the California Invasion of Privacy Act, and it prohibits recording or wiretapping of confidential communications without the consent of all parties. So if you look at this, it was done without the consent. Google says you go inside and the settings is buried somewhere deep in the settings that you could turn it off, but
Everything else in Google's suite of stuff.
It's hard to find.
So far, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the gist of all this. And I don't know how Google's going to win this. It's a violation, clearly, of that California law. And they'll get a slap on the wrist at the end.
There was a story a little while ago. I can't remember if we did it on this show or if I read it somewhere else about exactly this scanning of messages and specifically attachments. And the AI in question at the time, I don't know if it was Gemini or another AI LLM, but basically it was getting questions from a financial professional about a certain company being acquired by another company. And the AI model was saying, yeah, this is probably what's happening, giving, you know, probabilities for each response. And eventually, one of the questions, I guess, flipped the switch, you know, to grab a phrase from the story in the bot. And the bot replied with some data and information that the guy who was doing the queries had never heard before. And he was asking the bot where the bot got this from. And the bot's going, oh, I got it from, you know, XYZ. And a few queries later, the bot basically, you know, gives up the goods to the guy and says, yeah, I actually got it from this file. It's been passed back and forth by these two people. What do you do about that? These bots, every week we do a story about how the bots are not foolproof. The bots will cave to certain requests, and there's certain ways to own them, like you said, pwn them, and get them to do things that are, you know, presumably against the intention of the developers. Who knows if that's actually the case? I mean, that's another point we could debate. But to have them searching private information when all this other stuff is going on the side is irresponsible. It should be illegal. It should be punishable by jail time. These are people's private files, private conversations, private whatever, and you're scanning them for LLMs at the same time when people who are not particularly sharp, I mean, we've seen many instances of this on Twitter. They're not pros or anything. They just take their time and work around some of the obvious triggers and fail safes. And before you know it, they're looking at someone's private data or getting a response they weren't supposed to get, or getting help with tying a noose or whatever, right? Every week there's a story like this. And now they're looking at your private files too. It's a recipe for disaster, man. No doubt about it.
Will the courts give them the sentence that they deserve?
Who gets the sentence, the bot or Google?
Google, of course. They're the ones that are administering this bot. And let's be honest, this is in the state of California. That's where the lawsuit is being filed. Yeah. And Silicon Valley, that's where they're located. They're, you know, they must make a lot of donations to the political party over there that's in power, because they're always going to be in power, at least for the next little while. So they're going to try to grease the palms the legal way, and to make sure that things are done, you know, they're not really hurt in the end. So I think that there's going to be a judgment against Google, but I don't think it's going to be severe.
You think, eh?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get a severe.
Like, does anyone even have, this is the other problem, right? Does anyone even have, if you really want to go deep on this, who's got the nuts to take any of these monster AI companies to court over their product? Who's got the nuts to do that? The entire global economy right now is riding on the success of these companies. So, like, are you really going to torch pensions and the entire stock market over an LLM grabbing people's, you know, PDFs and email? I don't know. Maybe. But you'd certainly get some pushback from some pretty high places, if I had to guess.
Let's talk about Logitech next. Man, a lot of people must be using their mice, because it's an interesting story. This, they had a Logitech, they had a data breach over there. And the people behind it are the Klopp ransomware gang.
Talked about them before.
And this whole thing for Logitech, it was disclosed in an SEC filing that an unauthorized third party exploited a zero-day vulnerability through a third-party software platform. This is now a repeat story from last week. So this is part of the Oracle E-Business Suite. That was the enterprise resource planning solution. And those 0 days, as we discussed, it was nasty. We mentioned Washington Post. We mentioned Harvard, which were attacked, and these attackers were able to exploit the vulnerabilities. And Logitech, they got it this time. So a lot of people that were applying for the Logitech extended warranty for their mice, their information was then stolen.
Why do you keep saying mice? Isn't Logitech really more known for its webcams? Was that a bygone era?
Back in the day, Logitech mice is just huge. But anyways, Logitech, they say that the data likely included a limited information about employees and customers. So that's the good thing here. And they say that it does not believe any personal information like national ID cards or credit card information was stolen and taken through this compromised system. So that's the only good thing here. But you know what? Logitech, come on. I mean, more in the end, it's really Oracle. Like they're the ones that did it. But Logitech outsourcing stuff, if you're going to outsource it, well, this is what happens. It's if you could do it yourself, do it yourself. That way you have total control of everything. I understand there's a cost savings by using something that's already built, but there comes with some risk alongside that. So they got pwned this time, poor Logitech.
I'm very surprised at the size of that hall.
1.8 terabytes?
Yeah. How far must that go back? Because Logitech is not doing numbers now. So like, how far must that go back to have that? 20 years? 30 years?
Still, 1.8 terabytes.
It's a big number.
Yeah. Like, come on. Like, it's a lot
of text. Why does Logitech have to say no one's national ID card was... Like, who's giving their national ID card to Logitech? Why?
Again, when you're going for that extended warranty on the optical mouse, you got to give some information for yourself.
Anything can happen to that laser. It's not as robust as a ball. So we got to make sure that...
Now, the question is, though, is Logitech harvesting information from these webcams?
For sure.
Right? So are they taking video or audio or both?
I mean, you need the old webcam.
Terabyte.
The old webcams are safe. The ones that are like, you know, from 2004, MSN Messenger era webcams. I believe those are safe. But I had a D-Link webcam. Did you know that D-Link made webcams back in the day?
Yeah, I did know that. Yeah. They got their hands in a few different things. But
yeah.
Let's talk about people that got their hands in this Venezuelan doctor, Jose Alberto Marulanda Bedoya. Bedoya. Anyways, this guy, he was sentenced, tortured, and released because... No, it's his wife. He was arrested. Okay. So from what I gather, he was arrested because they were seeking his romantic partner.
Mm.
And a military officer suspected they were plotting against the government. And so you're right, it's she. That's right.
Yeah.
When they couldn't find... So. Basically, this was taken, tortured, and what's interesting was eventually the person was released and given a just waived of all the crime, a presidential pardon. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. And it just goes to show you, like, if especially in Venezuela. Like,
Wait a minute. Which story are you talking about here?
The Venezuelan doctor.
The Venezuelan doctor story is that they grabbed a voice note. Right. Okay.
And it given 30 years in prison, and then it was wiped. Eventually, given a presidential pardon.
I think the bigger thing than the pardon is like she went to jail for a voice note.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at. If you're in a country like Venezuela or a similar country where rules are arbitrary and they can, this was done by a military court, and she's not in the military. So, I'm just trying to say that the rules, they could, it's almost dictatorship. And if they want to put somebody in jail for whatever reason, they could do it through a kangaroo court. And you are basically charged, tried, and convicted. And in this person's case, they were tortured. They were saying physical abuse. This was nerve damage in the hand, permanent nerve damage. This is a surgeon, so she's not going to be able to perform her craft.
Mm-hmm.
Permanent hearing in the right ear. They were doing asphyxiation tactics, electric shock. This reminds me a bit of Ron Mexico and how he used to deal with his dogs. But in this case, he did it to a surgeon. Like, you got to be very careful who you speak to and what you say in certain countries. If you are investigated or even just thought to have been saying something against the regime, you're done. Yeah. You're put in jail, or worse, you may never come out to see the end of come out to see light again, and you just end up killed or whatever. So I'm just trying to say these countries are the absolute. It's kind of like Iraq, it's Syria, Iran. Like if you say something against the regime, North Korea, you're done. It doesn't matter if it was in jest. If they just think you said it, gone. You're finished.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's poor. Yeah, so it's sad, and it's just, you know. Like you said, from a WhatsApp message, like, come on, man.
You're closer to that here than...
Yes. I didn't want to say that because I don't want to be in the same type of situation.
Yeah, pretty closer. Yeah. The article on Zero Hedge, they had the article from John Turley. And yeah, like, you know, he points out It actually is nuts. If you're in Canada, the United Kingdom, some other places, this is happening too. Everyone has seen the pictures of cops at people's doors. And the UK, I think the number was in excess of 10,000 last year arrested for social media posts. They're redefining terms like Islamophobia to become more broad. And you know, again, like I'm not going to tap the sign, grab the book, whatever, again, but you're watching so many different poor, I don't want to say poor policies, but unpopular policies be forced on people. And people who vote are going, I didn't vote for this. And so what's the regime do? The regime doesn't say, sorry, we should listen to the people. The regime clamps down. There's a uniparty all over the world, man. Freedom as you once knew it is a thing of the past. And I don't think it's ever coming back.
Freedom and money. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Not the Singapore dollar, but like,
no, sure. Yeah. No.
Although the Singapore dollar is pretty darn cool.
Yeah. I don't know if it might be worth more than the Canadian dollar in the next 20 years. We'll see.
No, I don't think so. It's not right now. And I don't think it will be moving forward for whatever reason.
There's the Canadian dollar
because of the fact that we have the oil sands and a lot of other things people want. It keeps the Canadian dollar propped up.
Pretty soon it'll be the alleged oil sands if we keep them under wraps. Are we done? We're finished, I think.
Well, will the oil sands be given to some group that makes a claim for it?
Yeah, we're
we're eventually
going to cover that on this show, I bet, because that's pretty wild stuff. Anyway, until next time, my friends, take care. That was the latest creation, Data Breach and Overreach. And don't forget, sign up for the newsletter, accessofeasy.com, the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and the YouTube channel, where we are posting every week and doing shorts as well. And maybe more to come on YouTube. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. Until then, take care of yourselves.